From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. How time flies. Kim and Carrie's 8-week keto coaching program is coming up for another fresh intake. It is one of those timely coincidences that this week's guest talks about how important coaching and group support was on her health and wellness journey. If you are looking for a program that is well structured, is packed to the gunnels with delicious recipes, has a meal plan for just about everything you can think of, and has the friendliest and most helpful Facebook coaching support group out there, you need to check it out. Oh, and it also happens to be a great price. And if you snag your place by June 28th, you will get the early bird deal too. Go to start.ketowomanpodcast.com to find out more, or go to the usual links page at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's extraordinary woman is Glenda Carter. Glenda grew up slim until she had her appendix out when she was about 13 and then started to gain weight. Her family lived below the poverty line and they ate lots of store-bought bread with margarine and white sugar on it to keep their bellies full. With 11 mouths to feed and little money, food was all you had. They rarely ate meat or veg, but did have lots of coleslaw because cabbage was cheap. Glenda continued to gain weight through nursing training and after marriage, especially after pregnancy. She tried many diets but just kept gaining weight. Her doctors put her on a low-calorie program, but it wasn't sustainable. She would lose but then gain more until she reached 253 pounds at only 64 inches tall. Glenda ended up with high blood pressure and on insulin with her type 2 diabetes, and even considered having bariatric surgery to help treat her severe diabetes that she'd now had for 24 years. She found a bariatric surgeon while wintering in Arizona, and he told her to start a ketogenic diet, get off her insulin, and she wouldn't need surgery. He was right. Glenda is now the same weight as when she got married. She is down 115 pounds using keto, and then adding Dr. Fung's fasting protocol. Despite doctors telling her that keto is unsustainable, Glenda is now into her third year eating this way. She no longer has cravings and is finally happy living inside her new, smaller body. She has found the support of patient groups online to be invaluable on her journey to health and wellness. A special thanks this week goes to Glenda's husband, Bob, who showed great patience in helping us set up the necessary software for Glenda to record with me. I also have to give a big old shout out to my friend Pete, who is kindly letting me use his internet at the moment to do all the things I need to do to get this podcast to you, because mine is too slow to be able to do any of those things I need to do. That is when it's even working, which it fails to do most evenings. Welcome, Glenda, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm enjoying 10 centimeters of fresh new snow just down the road from me on June 20th.
That's crazy, isn't it? You should not really have snow in June. When is the last time you see snow where you are?
Well, it's pretty crazy around here because of the being in the mountains and with the weather changing around the world. So sometimes snow in June is here. So we just have to roll with it.
Right. So it's not that unusual, but not exactly what you're looking for this time of year.
No, not exactly. And it happens every couple of years. So
kind of used to it then.
Kind of, yeah.
Tell me a bit about you, Glenda.
Well, I'm 69.2 years.
69.2.
I figured that out, yeah. And I was born in 1950. And so I was a baby of the 50s and 60s. I grew up in the far north of Manitoba in a real cool town called Flin Flon, Manitoba. It has a real cool history. But it also made us very dependent on the big store, like the Hudson Bay store, to buy our groceries and to get food. And it wasn't conducive to gardening. It was a mining and smeltering town. So even though my mom would plant lettuce, it would all turn brown and yellow from the smelter smoke. Yeah. So we ate a lot of pretty awful foods back in the 50s and 60s. We ate a lot of white store-bought bread. My mom would put sugar on it and hot water, and that would often be our dinner because we didn't have money to access a lot of meat and veg and stuff like that. So I was in an ideal setup to get obese and gain weight from how I started living due to the poverty. By about age 13, I was starting to get pretty chubby. And I'd had my appendix out, and my mom has said all my life that my appendix changed my hormonal system, and that's why I started getting fat. So this was back in 1962 that my mom was saying this. She was probably kind of right. And over the years, I just kept gaining weight, and I would do lots of diets because Twiggy was very famous when I was 20, right? Mm. That's who we all want.
Of course, it was the age of Twiggy, wasn't it? Yeah.
Right. So we all wanted to look like Twiggy. So back then in the 70s, my girlfriends and I started doing the first Atkins diet that came out. And we thought this was just awesome. Like, we could eat whatever we wanted and go drinking on Friday and Saturday nights and not gain a bunch of weight. But all of our doctors were really opposed. And that soon went through a fad and everybody kind of went off that. I wished I'd been smart enough back then to stay on that because I would have weighed like about 125 pounds or something, you know, but I wasn't. And along came the low fat craze, right, in the 70s. And the Canadian food guidelines changed to promote a bunch of grains and fruits. And I did what I thought I should. I was a registered psychiatric nurse and I was really bought into the medical model at that time. And I followed my doctor's orders. I was a good patient. And I just slowly kept gaining and gaining weight. I got advice from my doctors about how to lose weight back then. I don't now, but back then they used to say to do Ornish diet, which I gained a lot of weight on, and I wasn't yet diabetic. And Echelon, again, which I gained a lot of weight on. And then I was pushed to do an 800 to 1,000 calorie a day diet. And I could do that, you know, for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. I just could never sustain it, but I could do it.
Well, yeah. Who wants to be hangry all the time?
Oh, totally. I don't even know how I survived because I worked full time. I was a mom and I did lots of volunteer work. But then eventually, every time I gained weight, I would gain, say I lost 20, I would gain back 30. Then I'd lose 30, I'd gain back 40.
That's a little crafty secret, isn't it? That
it is.
Goes along for the ride with these, especially when they're crash diets.
Yeah.
Is that when you gain it back, which of course you will, yeah, because they're not sustainable, you get that little extra added bonus,
yeah,
every single time. So these people who do, you know, 2 week crash diets, every time you're doing that, every single time you're going to gain just that little bit more each time.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
The other thing I realized as I did keto and have lost weight and have done so good is that gaining that little bit back just messes your metabolic system so much further and damages you so much more, even though maybe people around me were rejoicing, oh, I'd lost 30 pounds, but then I put on 40. I felt worse and worse as the years went by. I have always been curious about getting bariatric surgery due to my obesity all my life. But in Canada, I could never get bariatric surgery. I think the doctor told me I had to be 150 pounds overweight. I was getting close to the goal. So when I was in Arizona in the winter of 2017, I had sought out a bariatric surgeon because I did a bunch of research that having bariatric surgery can heal your type 2 diabetes. And by that time, I had been type 2 diabetes for 24 years.
Wow.
And I had been on insulin lots. And I would get myself off insulin, go on very, very low carb, kind of an Atkins kind of diet. But I would get pretty freaked out and scared because my doctors got freaked out and scared. So I wouldn't stay on it long term. But I could get off my insulin and I could get off my blood pressure drugs and I could do okay for a while. And then until I got words from my doctors to get off that diet and to go low calorie.
What I'm failing to grasp here... Why, when all the kind of markers that you would think would be important for your type 2, i.e. you were getting off your insulin, blood pressure was improving, yet your doctors were freaking out because this was something dangerous to do. What was their reasoning behind that? Because everything you're showing them in practical results, you would think they'd be jumping up and down saying, this is great, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Yeah, I know. Even I'm at a goal weight now and I'm down about 115 pounds and my A1C has gone from about 13.7 to 5.2.
Wow.
I'd like to get it under 5. Even though I've reversed my non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, I get no support from any of my medical professional people involved in my life. I have one doctor who recently said to me that what I'm doing is really great and to keep it up.
Wow.
But that's the only support. My doctor told me that it's not sustainable and she's a vegan. She didn't try and tell me to go on vegan, but just told me keto's not sustainable and look at your LDL and whatnot. But the retinologist who saw me about 2 weeks ago, because I've had five, I forget the medical term right now, but I've had five growths in my eyes due to being diabetic for 24 years. After I was keto for only 3 months, 4 of those growths disappeared.
Wow.
And only one remained. And it's a bigger one. I just had it checked 2 weeks ago and it's almost gone. So he was so excited.
I bet.
He asked about my keto diet and my intermittent fasting and what I did. That's the only person is the retina specialist. He said, I've read about this and I've read that you can reverse these. It's a form of retinopathy. But he said, I've never experienced or worked with somebody who's done that. He was really excited and really happy that I was able to do that. But my cardiologist wasn't. I started keto in March 2017 after I had seen this bariatric specialist in Arizona. And I'd kind of heard about the keto diet, and I kind of knew that it was similar to what the old Atkins was, but I wasn't confident going back on it because over the decades that I've been trying to lose weight, I didn't get any support from doctors whenever I went low carb because, of course, my LDL would go up.
And it wasn't just a case of not getting support. They were actively telling you that it wasn't a good thing to do. despite the results you were getting.
Exactly. I was actually kicked out of the big metabolic center in the city that I go to for treatment. It's a great big hospital with a famous metabolic center for diabetics. And I was pulled aside from one of the meetings and told that I wasn't allowed to talk about low carb.
Wow.
That it was very dangerous and that I shouldn't do that.
Incredible.
And that if I did it again, that they would have to remove me from the program. Well, I have a bed and breakfast, and I had a guest from the East Coast of the U.S. come, and she told me she wanted a low-carb diet for breakfast, because I ask all my guests about their dietary needs. And I've done that for 28 years since I've been in business. She said to me, well, I'm on that keto diet, so I need to have low carbs. She said, I work with Dr. Westman, and he's put me on this diet. And so I asked her, could I call you back on my dime and find out more about this Dr. Westman? So she told me all about him, and I looked him up, and I sent him an email, and I actually phoned him. And I told him the predicament I was in and what I could do and how I had no medical support, and I got kicked out of the metabolic center, and where could I go from here? And he sent me tons of documents to take to my doctors. He was so good. He didn't know me from the hole in the ground, but he reached out and helped me. And so I took that information to my doctors, but they weren't interested. And one of the doctors said, whatever you want to do in private, you go ahead and do, but I can't tell diabetic patients about this. And I said, well, you know, you're killing them, putting them on the Canadian food guidelines. Like, look what's happened to me. I'm on over 200 units of long-acting insulin. I got up to 253 pounds. I could hardly do my work or my job. I was depressed. I was stressed. I was having panic attacks. I was weak. I could hardly do my work. And I thought, I'm going to have to retire or quit this job. And I was just in my 50s then. So I did it again. And I did the keto diet that Westman said. And once again, I was faced with the same dilemma with my doctors being upset about having so much fat in my life and my LDL going up. And I was more focused on getting my blood sugar down. That's what I was focused on, was trying to keep my numbers within, we used to have a saying, between 4 and 8, feeling great. Mm-hmm. Well, now I want to keep my A1C under 5. But, you know, I bought into that because I was trained medically too in my job. And so I bought into that. And the more the doctors got anxious and the more they told me that I was going to have a heart attack because of my cholesterol and that I shouldn't be eating fat, I bought into that too. I didn't have the resources around me. I live very rural, like you, Daisy. I live in rural Canada in the mountains. I have to travel 8 hours for a medical appointment and an overnight in a hotel. And I don't mind doing that. I have a lovely doctor that I see in the city. But everybody I see is still very conventional. And so I haven't had a lot of support about keeping my blood sugars down and my blood pressure down. But I did wean myself off all the medication that I was on because it was making me sick. So like the beta blockers, and I can't even believe that I took statins, but I did, you know. And now looking back at my history, I think the statins contributed to my diabetes. The way I ate contributed to my diabetes. But the statins also probably contributed to my calcification. So when I saw this doctor in Arizona in 2017 to get the bariatric surgery, his first words to me was, get off that insulin, start a ketogenic diet, and you won't need bariatric surgery, and you won't need insulin. And just the way he explained it to me and everything he said, it just made so much sense. I thought, okay, I knew this before, but I didn't have the support to do it. And I purposely went to see him to see how much money it would cost. So the following year, I could save up money and go for bariatric surgery when I went to Arizona. So I worked with him really close, and I just started losing weight like anything. And within a week, my blood sugars were coming down to, they were under 8 all the time. I couldn't believe it because I'd been using industrial doses of insulin to keep my morning blood sugar under 5.9. That's what the guideline was that the medical field told me to do. So I would have to take massive amounts of insulin to get my fasting blood sugar down at that low. Now my fasting blood sugar is about 5 on its own. But now I'm so educated about it, I can't believe that I was so stupid about it at one time. But I didn't really have support. The support I found was all online. I found patient-to-patient groups were the most helpful to me. I found that people spoke their mind and gave links and research. And I spent hours. I've become a research hound. I've become addicted to doing this now. That's my pastime. So I've learned lots. And I worked with this doctor in Arizona till I came back to Canada in the spring. So I was with him about 4 weeks. And in that period of time, he asked if I wanted to see a cardiologist. And he asked if I had any symptoms or signs of heart disease. And I knew, being a diabetic for 24 years, I had something. And I knew I had a calcium score because I'd done one in the U.S. years ago. But my cardiologist at home said, it's all stable. It's fine. There's no real big worries. So the doctor in Arizona referred me to cardiologist. And of course, down there, it's really different. You get in right away because you pay for the service. So it was like a couple of days I got in. And they did all these tests, and they found that I had 100% blockage in my right coronary artery. Oh. Yeah, I had no signs or symptoms. And women often don't. And this has been one of my big pushes of information since I've been diagnosed, is telling all my friends that you may have heart disease and not know it, because women often don't have signs or symptoms. And here I was, 100% and 80% blocked in my arteries with no symptoms, other than if I would run up a set of stairs, I'd be breathless for a minute, but that's just because I thought I was overweight.
Exactly. There are so many things you could put something relatively so small down to. It's something that you could have listed a number of things, you know, getting older, being overweight, the type 2. I mean, it could have been so many different things that it's not the first thing you think of, is it?
No. And I would never go to a doctor for running up the stairs and being short of breath.
No.
Like, I would never go get that checked out, right? It's just common for lots of people. Mm. So that's the only symptom that I had.
What would have happened if you hadn't have gone and had that test? Would it have just meant you'd have suddenly had a heart attack at some point?
Well, my cardiologist here told me that I would have. He blamed the fact that I went off statins that that happened. But I know that the calcification takes decades to grow.
Yeah.
And I do believe the statins contributed. I don't think they helped me in any kind of way. I have a whole list of things and stories about statins, but I won't get into that today. They said I would have eventually probably had a massive heart attack and no signs or symptoms, I guess, and that it's common for women.
Right.
So when I got back to Canada, I had forwarded all my test results to my cardiologist and doctor in Canada. And I thought, well, it's going to take me months to get in. But they saw me right away in a week. So that made me realize that's how serious it was. Like, I initially didn't think it was all that serious, because previous, the cardiologist told me it's fine, it's stable, you don't have to worry. So I didn't think anything could happen that fast. However, in that time, I'd also been in a major motor vehicle accident, a big crash where we lost everything and I got injured. And I had a concussion and I had some pretty serious injuries to my musculoskeletal system. I know that that kind of post-traumatic stress can make the plaque grow. And because of the post-traumatic stress, I had pretty serious insomnia. And I know that lack of sleep can make plaque grow too. So I kind of put it in my head that it was due to these two big stresses in my life that my plaque started growing faster.
I mean, the physical trauma from a car accident, just that without the other things you've mentioned, it's going to just put a massive strain on your whole system, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what the cardiologist, when he saw me in Canada and he did an angiogram right away. He just was freaked. He came running out of the back room where they do the angiogram and said, have you started smoking? And I said, no, I've never smoked a day in my life. And he said, your heart is that of a smoker. He said, you're going to need open heart surgery. He said, you have 100% blockage in one artery. And that just made me shocked. Mm. And I thought, I better not tell him that I've been on keto for 6 weeks, because I know they'd blame the keto, right? I mean, now by that time, I'd figured out how the medical profession was thinking about low carb and keto and all that stuff. So I kind of learned to protect myself from certain people. And I had open heart surgery within 5 weeks from that diagnosis. So I had been on keto for about 6 weeks when I started reading about Dr. Fung's program online. I didn't learn that information through any medical professions. I learned all that because I was researching myself and trying to become healthier and believe that I'm responsible for my own health. So as I researched into Fung's protocol, and I knew my surgery date was coming up, I wanted to lose as much as I could before surgery, because I thought that would help my healing. And right at that time, they were just starting to talk about autophagy. It hadn't been talked about before. I don't even think I knew the word. I do now. So I read all about Fun, his books and his website and his program, and I started doing intermittent fasting, and I'd been on keto for 6 weeks, so the fasting wasn't too hard for me to do. I was able to do that without being too starved. Then I kind of put together in my head, you know, I've had a weight problem for like 50 years, and now it's pretty harsh. I'm having open heart surgery. I need to have somebody that knows about this to help me, because I'm not going to get support at home. So I signed up for the IDM program. And my God, I was so fortunate. I had somebody looking after me, that Megan and I became partners in my weight loss journey.
Fantastic.
And that's one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Well, finally, like you say, you had some support from the bariatric surgeon. You had some support at a distance with the communication you had with Dr. Westman. But I imagine to have somebody focused on you, working with you in a partnership, mm-hmm. when you didn't have that medical support around you, must have been the thing. By then, with the knowledge that you'd already started building yourself, I can see how that could make a real big difference to you.
Yeah, I've been alone in this problem, I think, basically all my life, working with people who always thought differently than me, but always felt responsible to do what they asked of me. And seeing Megan once a week on Zoom, and she had so many tips of what to do when you did get hungry or when you broke a fast. I still struggled. It wasn't easy, believe me. It wasn't easy. And I started working with Megan in July, and my open heart surgery was May. And so we had set up an agreement that I wouldn't do any extended fasting for a while till I was healed from the open heart surgery. But I did lots of intermittent fasting, and I stayed keto. And I got lots of tips for eating keto and what to cook and what to make and all that kind of stuff. So it was fine to eat a steak a day and a salad, you know. I think I healed more than the average person, because I had a lot of complications from my surgery, from mistakes that were made in my surgery.
Really?
Yeah. I had a major cardiac bleed out and a big hematoma because some of the surgery wasn't done properly. So it was very, very hard to walk, but I knew that walking was what was going to help me, and I knew what I put in my body is what was going to help me. And my husband was very supportive of all that. So when I was in the hospital, I mean, the food is so gross there, and big mounds of potatoes and peas and little piece of turkey or whatever, lots of fruit cups and lots of rice. And so Bob would bring me in just some scrambled eggs, but I was too sick to eat anyhow. So I basically fasted the 4 days I was in the hospital, and I hid it that I fasted so that I wouldn't get repercussions. I was too sick to argue with anybody, but it was okay to fast, you know, like I felt good. I think that helped my healing too. Fasting, being keto when I did eat, and making myself walk, even though it hurt like hell to walk. I made myself walk.
Yeah.
And I always had to be aware of where I walk because there's bears around. So I had to be prepared to run if I had to run.
That's not something you hear every day, is it? Got to be a little bit careful when I go for a walk in case I run into a bear.
You know what? That has just hit my mind now. Actually, I have a real funny story that Megan really appreciated. Once I lost my weight, I was down on my hill. I live on the edge of a mountain. And I was down on the hill and I was picking some wildflowers, and I could see a bear at the bottom of my hill. So I ran back up to my deck, but I knew I couldn't get there in time because I had to go around the big deck. But there's a little opening on the front where it attaches to the house, and I couldn't believe it, but I slid through that little opening and got into the house. I would never have been able to do that if I hadn't lost all my weight. So I lost this weight, got through all these small corners, and it's made my whole life easier being a small person. I've always been a really big person, and I never knew how much different it was to live as a smaller person. Like, it's just easier to move places, to sit on airplanes, to get up and down stairs. I still struggle with things from being a fat person. Like, I still struggle with, it's not with food. It's not with the food, what I want to eat, which is really strange. You'd think that I would struggle wanting a piece of chocolate cake. I don't. I don't have any cravings for things like that. I did when I first started. And Megan would give me different tips how to deal with that. And that's why I think my investment doing a coaching program is one of the best things I ever decided to do, because it just kept me, when I would want that piece of cake initially, it just kept me from going there, because I knew I had to be accountable and tell somebody how my week went. And to tell somebody that knew the ins and outs not somebody that was going to glib it over, you know.
Mm. She's very real, isn't she, Megan? I've heard her talking about her own struggles with food addiction before, and she's, you know, she's built up some successful tips that work for her. And I think when you have issues yourself and you're working with a coach, you kind of want to hear from somebody who's had the same struggles or similar struggles to you and how they've worked through it. It's no good really working with somebody who's perfect and has always been able to do everything the first time and all the rest of it. You want to hear about somebody else's stumbles and how they've managed to get through that. So they can give you some real tips that, you know, are going to work. And I've always got that from her, listening to her speaking about the tips that she's found that work for her. It comes from that place that you know is very likely to work for you because it's worked for her.
Yeah, like her experience, we had a lot of similar experiences. And so it was really helpful. Like after I started doing 3-day fast, I had a problem with eating. I'd want to overeat and gorge on my first meal. Even though I had everything planned and set out what I was going to have, my body's instinct was to just fill my face. And Megan said, "You're not getting enough fat. Every salad you have, I want you to have 3 tablespoons of olive oil on it." Or just a little tidbit here and there like that. Just something that I wouldn't have put together myself, was just said out loud to me, and I did it, and it worked. So it was like, oh, okay, like this is really good. This is, I was trying to get all my friends to sign up to get coaching and that kind of thing, because when people were seeing that I was losing weight, a lot of people coming to me were like, "What are you doing? And you look so good," and all this stuff. And I'd tell them about the ketogenic program, and I'd list a bunch of different sites and suggest to go coaching. Although none of my friends have, but I've been able to coach about 20 people. Most of them have got off insulin and medications and have lost weight. And, you know, because people haven't seen me for 6 months when I go down to Arizona. And it's a big difference when somebody's lost a bunch of weight and you're at a normal body weight and everybody's used to looking at you as being obese. And so a lot of people were really supportive and wanted to learn and wanted to do it. But I had a lot of pretty ugly feedback from friends.
Really?
Yeah, I had a guy tell me that I looked like I was dying with cancer. And I've had people tell me to put some meat on my bones. And Arizona was a cold winter the last year. And everybody was telling me I was so cold because I was too skinny and because I'd lost weight and that I lost too much weight. I was still above what the charts say for my height. My goal was to get back to my weight that I was when I got married, but that was still maybe 15 pounds above what the charts say. But as I age, I don't want to get too small, because I also have a belief about if you ever got some kind of disease or illness, you need a little bit of fat on your body to protect you and to help you heal. So it was very interesting, people's reactions to me being on the keto program and losing weight and fasting. A lot of people freaked about that. And the news was just getting really big about keto. Like, it took a while. I was probably on keto. I was kind of fortunate because I was on keto before all those products came out. Mm. And because I live rural, I don't have access to those products. So I would read about people buying all these different things. And I think, oh, geez, I wish I could try that. And then actually, I started to learn that, you know, I'm really fortunate that I live so rural and I don't have access to anything in a package. Everything I eat, we cook from scratch.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, I realize now. Like,
best way to do it.
Yeah. I don't buy anything keto. I don't use any artificial sweeteners. I've just found working with a coach helped me to find my triggers. And by eating keto, I got rid of all those triggers for food. So if I was somebody that did fat bombs or cream cheeses, cakes, and all the things, I'm on a slippery slope. I've died and lost, I don't know, at least 1,000 pounds in my lifetime. And I just learned that I'm just one of those people that I can't expand into that field of eating sweets. And so if everybody's having dessert, I have dark chocolate. Or maybe I'll put some cream on, some blueberries and stuff like that. So I've really lost all that craving, which is really great. Because for the first 6 months on keto, it was like a daily battle to not have something high carb. And I think that's why the coaching helped, is because, and everybody else in the meeting had the same cravings. But then when those cravings left, it sure made life easier. But if you don't stay keto and if you don't stay true to the process, my experience has been you keep the cravings coming back. And that's hard to be hungry for something that you really want that other people are eating and you can't. So once you hit that point where you don't crave anymore, I think that's sort of was the magical point for me, was when I stopped craving.
So would you say that is what helped you get through? Because 6 months is, that's quite a long time to be, you know, still white knuckling it a bit. That's a long period of time to keep that motivation going. Do you think that's what the key was for you, having that group support online?
Yeah, having the group support, having a coach, having recipes and ideas about what to cook using just keto foods. But at the end of 6 months, I thought I was off my slippery slope and I thought I had it mastered. And it was Christmas, my first year. And I went to see my 98-year-old aunt who had some Scottish shortbread. And I thought, wow.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, mine too. And it's a family tradition, right? And I didn't make any because I knew I'd want to eat it. So I thought, I'm not making it for other people if I can't eat it. But I did eat. I went to see her over in Manitoba and I did start eating those things. And I did it for a couple of days and I realized, holy, I'm going back to my old habits. And it made me pretty scared because within a matter of a couple of days, my weight was up 10 pounds. My cravings were back. I got back from Manitoba and I phoned Megan. And I found out that almost, well, a large percentage of people do this after Christmas. And then they have a big struggle for the first many months of the new year. And I had vowed I wasn't going to be one of those people. I had vowed that I'm paying money for this. I'm getting older in my life. I have a serious surgery. I'm not going to do that. But I did. And it took me, I was on a stall after that fall down at Christmas. It took me 5 months to get off my stall. So that really taught me a good lesson. 5 months is a long time when before that you'd been losing weight regularly. Like I lost 60 pounds, just like nothing. I'm not saying it was easy, but I did it. And then I fell off the wagon and ate at Christmas. Well, I didn't do that a second Christmas, I'll tell you.
Good for you.
I learned my lesson. I stayed clean. And I realized how that sugar and the sweet taste. So even if I make keto treats and there's no sugar in it, but there's that sweet taste, that is a really big trigger for me. And my system was so damaged, I think, from eating so rotten for all my life that I didn't have it in me to have one cookie and stop. I just wasn't built that way. So now I just don't touch it. I don't have it. So my second Christmas, I was not going to repeat the pattern of my first Christmas. And the one big tip I learned, and I say this to my friends that are starting keto, and you probably know this yourself, every year gets easier. So I'm into my third year, about 3 or 4 months into my third year, and it is. So for people just starting out that are struggling and thinking about the slippery slopes and the cravings and the weight loss, it does get easier. And I'm so glad that was told to me because I hang on to that information when people say those things and give you hope. You hang on to that and then you see that happening and you think, oh my God, I can live to be a real old lady like this. You know, I'm not going to get fat again and I'm not going to get high blood sugars again and I can keep this under control. And so I just don't take the risk when people are passing around candies or food or whatever. I don't even have one. I don't have a taste. And I don't miss it. That's one of the biggest things I've gained through all this experience is not having to have the treats when other people are. Although I have to sometimes defend what I'm having because people will see me have this big steak and 2 hamburger patties, or I have this beautiful breakfast sitting beside me waiting to have when we're done our conversation. And people say, gee, we eat a lot of meat. Do you always eat that much protein? And I'm thinking, yeah, I should have been doing this the last 50 or 60 years. So I find that I have to always, most every day, educate somebody around me that's watching me eat. And when I was eating 2 and 3 bowls of cereal, nobody ever said anything to me about the carbs and the garbage that's in Cheerios. And when I was making a sandwich with a tomato in it and no mayo and no butter, according to my dietitian's guidelines, I would get praised for having two pieces of bread with tomato. And I thought, well, how come nobody's praising me for losing this weight and not eating bread now? But whenever I discuss it with a dietitian, they're still trained in the conventional way and they don't like that I'm eating more meat or cheese or whatever. But you know what? My CRP is down to 0.2. My A1C is down to 5.2. My HDL is from 58 up to 98. My LDL is higher than the range, but not much higher than the range, but I take no treatment for it other than whatever. Adaptive, the keto idea of food is my medicine, and that's what I use for my medicine, is what I put in my body. And being trained medically, that's exact opposite of how I was trained. I was trained that there's like a pill for everything, but I've learned that there isn't a pill to help you. What do they say? You can't outrun a bad diet, right?
Mm.
And all that falls to place to me now.
Mm.
When I first started the keto 2.5 years ago, I would hear that, but I didn't live it. I didn't feel it. But now I do. I really do. And I feel like I can get another 25, 30 years out of my life eating this way because I'm so much healthier and I don't have the cravings. I have a smaller waist. It's fun to go buy clothes.
Mm.
Although the big problem, the biggest problem in the whole thing is what goes on inside your brain. Like, those are your struggles. It's what goes on inside your brain. It's not so much what's going on inside your gut or your stomach, but it's your brain. And I still go to big women's stores and I'll still look at size 3X and 4X. And I'm getting better, but I don't go to, I'm wearing a size 10 and an 8. I don't go to the size 8 and 10 racks till after I've been in the store a while and realizing I can't wear this 3XL. Like, I have to talk to myself about it because I've been indoctrinated all my life as a fat woman. And it's very, very hard to start changing how you see yourself.
Of course it is.
You know, we were in Costco one day and my husband walked right by me. We've been married 45 years. He didn't recognize me. So it's something for your whole family to deal with. Like my son, his family has changed their eating habits somewhat because of my influence. And I get a lot of support from them because they knew how sick I was. And so I still work mentally to think as a slim person and to think as a healthy person, because that's been with me for so many years, to be a fat person and an unhealthy person.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's that, just that instinctive response to something, because you've spent so many years, decades, where that response has been as a fat person.
Yeah.
So it's instinctive. And you do have to stop and think and remind yourself that you don't need to be taking that stance anymore. But it takes a while, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Retraining, you know, just as you've taken time retraining your body to eat different things and get past all those cravings. Well, it's the same thing with how your brain works too.
Yeah. In my job, we used to say, and I really see this in the keto world now, in the nutrition world, but we used to say the art and the science of medicine never catch up to each other because the art is very different than the science. And I'm thinking it's the same thing in my brain. Like, there's an art and a science in my brain where I have to get it together to think that, okay, I now am in control of my life and my health and my weight and my food and what I buy, what I wear. And I know that sounds so simple and so obvious, but it is a struggle in your head to get to that point where you feel like, okay, you've got it mastered. Like, I have it mastered now. I really do. And I went shopping in Arizona before I came home, and I went into a store and I went right over to the size 8s and 10s and started looking because I was in a hurry. And I thought, holy smoke, I can't believe I did this.
Getting there.
You know, because that was a big step.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds simple, but it's a big step.
Mm. It sounds like you have a bit of a split life. You spend quite a lot of time in Arizona. Do you have family there?
No, we try to get away from the cold.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
I'm a patriotic Canadian. But as I age, I don't handle the cold really well.
Ah.
And we have lots of wonderful friends down there. So we go down there in the winter. Yeah, I'll tell you, when I go shopping down there in the stores with what they have for keto products, there are shelves and rows of processed, packaged chemicals being passed off as food.
Mm.
And you see these in people's shopping carts, and they're very expensive. Like a little package of, say, Moon Cheese or whatever it's probably equal to, say, half a cup of cheese, and it's like $6 or $7 American to buy the bag of it. So we just learned to make all those things at home.
Although you've picked on one of the things that I have tried when I was in the States that I think are particularly delicious. And they are, I mean, they're one of these things that they're not actually overprocessed, are they? It's just, they've just been cooked in a certain way to make these delicious little light, airy balls of cheese. They are very delicious, aren't they?
They are. You know, when I do use them is when I'm flying, because they sell them in the stores in the airport.
Perfect.
So I pick up bags.
Nice treat for your journey.
Yeah. And then it keeps you full and you don't have to worry. But for day-to-day stuff, we make our own moon cheese. We make our own crackers. We make everything ourselves. And we have no chemicals in it.
Fabulous.
And we're using pure products that we can use.
So tell me what it sounds like. I'm guessing you're going to tell me about something fairly simple from what you've already said. But what does your day-to-day, everyday keto look like?
Well, it is very simple. We eat a lot of eggs. And fortunately, we have access to free-range eggs from a farmer.
Delicious.
And so they're very good eggs. You know, if you had to eat store-bought eggs, you wouldn't eat eggs every day. So we usually have a couple of eggs every day. Bob makes some homemade sausage, so we often have some sausage with it. I've gone down to one meal a day, sometimes two meals a day. Sometimes my first meal is like a bowl of olives and a couple of pieces of cheddar cheese, and that's my meal. That's all I need, because I've learned now I only eat when I'm hungry. I've never been able to do that before in my life. And I'm not trying to make it really easy, because it isn't, because I'm a very busy, busy person. And so getting meals together, I focus on protein and a salad and a low-carb veg. So we just about always have like a meat salad and a veg for supper. And I don't do a lot of fancy different baking with it. We just put together what we need so it tastes good. I find that if I get too much into recipes, I can overeat too easy. I like to make sauces, but I make them sort of myself. I make them simple, where I don't put a lot of additions to them. I find that the simpler I keep it, the more I stay on track. And then if I have leftovers, I can have them for breakfast or lunch, and it's simple, and I'm still staying on track. I have done different casseroles and different cakes and things from keto recipes. And then when I have leftovers, I find I overeat them too. So I don't know how to explain it. I just need to keep it really simple.
I absolutely get what you're saying. I feel the same way. It sounds like it works really well for you on different levels, because you're very busy. So keeping it simple works from that point of view, because you don't have much time to prepare and make complicated meals. But also it works really well from keeping your cravings under control and tendencies to overeat. I know what you mean. It's just when something's overly palatable in a way, you want things to be tasty, you want things to taste good, you want to enjoy your food. But if you go too far down that line and make them too tasty and too appealing, you just keep going back to take a bit more and going back for seconds, going back for thirds, because it's too delicious almost.
Yes. And I think growing up and eating high carbs, that becomes a pattern that your body recognizes. And that too is very, very hard to change, because your body gets really used to getting all that food and that flavor and taste. And you have all these trillions of cells in your body that remember that. And you're trying so hard mentally to stay straight and simple. But if you eat something that's too glamorous and really good, then your cells all remember, oh yeah, you used to like to gorge yourself or eat till it's all gone, you know, and I don't do that. And I think it's because I've kept it simple. Like, we have enough on our plate that we're full at the end of our meal. We don't need to go look in the kitchen and snack on anything else. And we don't get triggers of hunger 2 hours later. Like, I used to always be hungry 2 hours after a meal because my blood sugar would go so high and then drop. And so I was always hungry, and I'm not now. And I eat just enough. We eat a lot of steak. Alberta's known for its good beef. So we have a lot of steak. And we have a lot of eggs. And we have a lot of salmon. It's very expensive where we live. We go fishing as well. And we eat the fish that we catch. We don't get fatty fish here. So when I eat something that isn't fatty, like chicken or fish, I make this homemade keto mayo. I started making on day one of keto. And it's been one of the best things I've ever done because it's so good. You could eat it by the spoonful. So when I first started, like the first, say, 6 months, and I was going through fighting the cravings and everything, I would have a tablespoon of my homemade mayo. And I know people would think, oh, gross. But I would spread my mayo on a piece of cheddar cheese. And I had my fat and my protein. And it stopped me from gorging on carbs. And it stopped me from overeating. And it was a key for me to have that fat. But I also had to work mentally on having that fat because I was one of those low fat girls in the 70s. I was 20. So I was trained right at the age of how to look like Twiggy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't eat fat. Mm. It was hard for me to learn to eat fat. I'm okay now, but I had to force myself. And when I have friends say to me, oh, I couldn't eat that, you know, I said, I couldn't initially either, but I do now. And it's almost preventative. You know, if I'm having a busy day and I haven't had much to eat, I'll go get a tablespoon of my mayonnaise and about four or five olives. That's my meal till I would sit down and eat dinner. And actually, it's really satisfying. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people think I'm being too restrictive, but it doesn't feel like that to me. It feels I'm full and I'm healthy and I have the energy when I do that. It's a total switch for me to live how I live now compared to how I used to live, say, 3 years ago. Mm. I'm saving so much money not being on those high doses of insulin. My insulin alone was $700 a month.
Wow. That's a lot of steak.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Those ribeyes come expensive, you know, so I just substitute the ribeyes for the insulin. No, I'm just kidding. I do watch my protein. I started out kind of low protein, but over the 2.5 years I've been doing keto, I have upped my protein. And I found that's better for me. I don't measure anything anymore. I just eyeball what I know I need. I think that's a key if you want to stay keto for a lifetime. I think the key is to learn to not to have to measure and to be able to eyeball so that you go out and you're at other people's houses. You know what you can take and how much you can take and what's going to bump your blood sugar or what's going to give you a big insulin response or what's going to make you crave after. Like, I feel I've got that all down pat inside my head now. I don't ever have to struggle with it in any way.
Well, that's the kind of thing that comes with experience and just doing it over and over and keeping it simple. You just get to know roughly how much is in all the kind of things you tend to have. And it just makes it easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. In Arizona, people have a lot of parties where everybody brings dishes. And it's just awesome food. And it's so beautiful. And at one time, my first year, I had a little taste here and there. And I recognized right away it was triggering cravings. So now the second year that I've been there, since my second year on keto, I don't have little tastes of anything. I always take what I know I can eat so that if there isn't things there, I know I can eat my food. Mm. I don't stray. I've got really good about that. I don't even have a desire to stray. And I think that'll stay with me for the rest of my life.
Good for you. Well, you're a great inspiration. And I think people will get a lot from listening to your story. And you've already shared quite a few tips with us. But what would be your top tip to leave the listeners with today?
Mm. Well, what worked for me was a top tip was finally knowing that I needed a coach to help me, that I struggled for 50 years to lose weight only to gain. And I think having someone that understands the physiological dynamics of food and the impact of the psychological impacts of overeating, I think having somebody coach you helps you to transition into being a true keto person, because it's very easy to fall back into your old habits. And I see people on all these different forums that I read where they just slide back and forth from keto to regular carbs, from keto to regular carbs, and they're really struggling. And I think having a coach be there to be able to talk to you about that when you're struggling, it really helped me. Like, I needed that help the first year. I really did. I don't now, but I really did the first year. And that was a good tip for me. It was good to always hear from someone to say, trust the process, it will work. Because I read that and I thought, well, it won't for me. My body's been so damaged all these years, it won't for me, you know. And having someone say that out loud to, or tell you to add more fat, just little tips that you read and you know, but it's against what you've been conditioned to. So having someone say that out loud to you was number one for me, getting someone to say that.
Well, thank you for sharing that and sharing your story. It's been A great pleasure talking to you today, Glenda. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Daisy, for recognizing that. I appreciate that.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you luck and may you always be able to run swiftly away from bears.
I will. Thank you, Daisy.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Albert Einstein and is something I keep needing to remind myself lately. Life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.